business started to crumble, so did I. I think one of the skills of an entrepreneur is you don't take it personally. I think if you've got a motivation that's just purely intrinsic for enjoying what you're doing, then that motivation is just energy, that source of fuel that you can burn forever.
You want to make sure you take the path of least resistance to get the result.
When I was first finding out about you, Lewis, and people that were, you know, doing really well, they're successful with their businesses, you almost think that, well, surely they just sit on a beach, they've made it, they sit back and relax.
If you can learn from other people's expensive mistakes about what didn't work, you can then learn where to spend your investment most efficiently.
Success leaves clues. So if we can learn from what the best people do, what the best businesses are doing, then we can implement that and achieve the same success.
Now, in terms of the entrepreneurial traits that make entrepreneurs successful, I mean, a few of the things, and this is not an exhaustive list by any means, but... Welcome to the Dropship Unlocked podcast. I'm Lewis Smith, the founder of Dropship Unlocked, and with me is our client success coach, James Eardley. Now, when we're not recording the podcast episodes, we're running our own e-commerce businesses and helping aspiring entrepreneurs launch their own high-ticket dropshipping businesses. Keen to build your own six or even seven figure business? My book, The Home Turf Advantage, is your blueprint for launching a profitable online store. Grab your copy at htabook.com today and let's get you started. Now sit back, relax, and let's unlock your potential with the Dropship Unlocked podcast.
Today, Lewis and I are going to be diving into our highs and lows of our dropshipping journey. And the way we're going to be revealing these insights is through the questions that you've been asking us. So this is episode number 50 of the Dropship Unlocked podcast. And I can't believe we've got to episode 50 already. So thank you for everyone that's been listening, for all of your support. And to celebrate getting to this milestone number, we've been collecting questions that we've been receiving, and we're going to answer them in an episode today dedicated to answering your questions. So, Lewis, do you feel excited to answer some questions today?
Yeah, really looking forward to this one. I think it's going to be a great episode, great milestone to mark the big 5-0. And as you say, I can't believe that we've reached this stage and the first 50 of many more to come.
Absolutely. Here's to 50 more, and we'll do a milestone episode each time. So let us know if you've got any ideas for that. And let's start off with some quick fire questions, Lewis, for you. And then we'll go into some questions that need a bit more explanation. So firstly, a question that we've had in from Terran. And she's asked, what was your biggest failure?
Yeah, interesting. It was funny. We were talking about this just offline before we started recording the podcast, actually. And currently at the moment, I'm sitting in a business center at the apartment complex in Mexico, where I'm living at the moment. And it reminded me, like, the makeshift setup I have here with, like, the camera balancing on, you know, a kind of a pot above the laptop, reminded me of when I was in Bali. And it was a few years ago, and we'd hit some financial troubles with my e-commerce business, where I'd taken my eye off the accounting. I hadn't set aside the correct amount of funds for the VAT that was going to be due that quarter, or the corporation tax. I was kind of just like seeing money go into the account, money go out, hoping that it would all balance out. You know, and it often doesn't when you take your eye off the ball like that. And I got to the point where we had pretty much zero in there, and we had suppliers calling us saying, okay, we need that 20 grand payment now. And me just thinking, well, I don't have it. I don't know what to say to them. And that level of anxiety, that insomnia that I experienced for the first time ever, was such a low for me. And it made me realize, firstly, how much I'd tied my identity to the success or failure of my business, which was a mistake. I should have separated those two more. But also, it just taught me so much about how to run a successful business. And there was a moment where I was on a conference call, or on like a call, I think, with the accountant and one of the suppliers, trying to figure out payment terms, how I could pay them back. And I was in a hostel kind of hotel in Bali, and they didn't have a desk in the room. So I had to pull out this mini fridge that was like under the desk, and it was this like boiling hot mini fridge that was like rumbling with like a motor in it. And I had to kind of like straddle this mini fridge with my laptop like perched up by the TV and get on this Zoom call. And I just, in that moment, I think Becky looked at me almost like, what are you doing? And it just made me think, I've really hit a low bit. Like, this is not what I had pictured when it came to digital nomadism and location independence. So fortunately, we managed to get out and we managed to pay the supplier back over time. And since then, that was probably the best lesson I've ever learned in business, because I've not taken my eye off the finances since then. So it was a great lesson. But yeah, probably being 20K in debt very early in my business was a big failure of mine, and something that I make very sure to encourage anyone who follows our method now never gets into the same situation by following the tracker templates that we lay out.
And failure is the best teacher, as is so often said. So I love that question because it really dives into some of the biggest lessons that you've learned as well. So thanks for that quick question, Terran. Next up is a question from Abby, and she's asked, what keeps you motivated and driven?
Well, I think it changes over time, doesn't it? Originally, what kept me motivated was family. You know, I didn't have children at the time when I first decided to start one of these businesses. I do now. But at the time, it was like I knew I was going to become a dad and at some point in the near future. And obviously, I was married to my wife, Becky, as well. And so initially, it was like that freedom to be present with them, to be a present husband, to be a present dad in the future to my children. And it still is now to an extent, but I guess once you reach that point where you are free with them and you can spend time with them doing whatever you want to do, you need to kind of adjust your motivation and what drives. And I've thought about this one and I keep trying to recalibrate what it is that drives me. And I think I've come to the acceptance and the realization that it's not necessarily any one thing. I just love the game of business. I just enjoy it. I enjoy building things, creating things. You know, out here in Mexico, if I said, I'm not going to do any work, I'm not going to look at the businesses, I'm just going to read on a sun lounger for 2 weeks, I would be driving myself insane, because all I would think about is like, I want to build something. I want to create something. I want to do something. I don't feel any personal growth. So I think that's one of my biggest character flaws, but is also the thing that keeps me motivated, is that I find it difficult to switch off, you know. And one of the things that I enjoy now is helping people and making sure that I'm able to help them avoid the mistakes that I made, like I mentioned at the start, but also like meeting them in real life. We do our member meetups now in Dropship Unlocked, and hearing their stories firsthand, people who come to me and say like, you guys literally like changed my life. I was working in a boring job. I hated it. And now I'm free, run my business from my computer, can live anywhere in the world. And it's great to see that in real life coming through. So yeah, I think after a while I adapted that, why I expanded my reason, my motivation, my driver. And I just knew for me that it's an outlet. This business is something that I can pour my inspiration into. You know, the idea of dropship, both my e-learning company, but also my e-commerce companies, things that I can build, and it's kind of like a video game, but the outcomes are real life outcomes, you know. So rather than just like leveling up and getting the currency in the game, the results you create are real, the freedom you create is real, and the finances, the experiences that you can then have are all real. So yeah, I chose this kind of type of lifestyle business so that I could be a present dad and a present husband, but then it very quickly evolved into like, I just really enjoy what I do now. So I've kind of become addicted to the game, and I just enjoy building, growing businesses. And then I actually need willpower and motivation to stop working. That's the thing I could probably do with some of. It's like the motivation to tune out and relax, you know.
Interesting. It's round now, so you don't need the motivation to get started. You need motivation to actually stop. That's interesting. I think motivation does change as you go through a business journey. And when you reach goals that you previously had, you then have to find other motivations to keep going. And I think if you've got a motivation that's just purely intrinsic for enjoying what you're doing, then that motivation is just energy, that source of fuel that you can burn forever, because you're never going to achieve that. It's not a set goal that you're going for. So that's fascinating. And it kind of ties into this next question from Claire. And she's asked, can you share a moment in your dropshipping journey when you realized that you had made it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think it might be different for some listeners, but I'm always striving for the next goal. So I think if someone ever feels like they've made it, in inverted commas, what happens is they quickly, like, they lose the hunger. The hunger dries up, and then they stop doing what they did that got them to where they are. And so to me, I'm always focused on the next goal, the next target, whether that's an income target, whether that's an impact target to help more people. But I'm always conscious of what work I put in to get here. And to me, I'm always like, no matter how much I level up, I always feel like I'm only just getting started. And I think that's because I invest in myself and my personal development. And I'm always around people who are operating at a higher level than me. I pay to get in the same room as those people. And certainly I'm not taking my foot off the pedal now, because I, you know, I get into a room around other people that are way further ahead than where I am. And I'm thinking, well, this is like, I'm only scratching the surface. So yeah, of course, there's some nice milestones along the way. You know, you hit your first 10K month. Great. You hit your first 100 or 200,000 pounds in sales. Amazing. When you hit your first 1, 2, 3 million pounds, well, they're all great milestones. And we want to recognize those, take a moment and, you know, congratulate ourselves and congratulate each other. If you're in our community, you're definitely worth posting about those, because people will kind of digitally pat you on the back. But anyone who spends too long celebrating and patting themselves on the back for that bit too long, we tend to see that they take their eye off the ball, and that complacency can start to creep in. So I think it's a very dangerous thing to ever say, I've made it, because it won't be for long.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a fascinating mindset. I think when I was first finding out about you, Lewis, and people that were, you know, doing really well, or they're successful with their businesses, you almost think that, well, surely they just sit on a beach, they've made it, they sit back and relax, because there's a moment when they look around and think, I've made it. But the more and more people I get around that are in those positions, the more and more I realize that they feel like they make it every day, just through the enjoyment of doing the work that they get to do and designing a lifestyle that they love, which is often revolved around working and getting to the next stage and enjoying that process. So it's interesting to hear your mindset is very similar to that as well, Lewis. Okay, brilliant. So here's some more questions now. These probably need a little bit more explanation. And the first one we've had in is from Harrison and Ben. So they're members of the Dropship Unlocked Launchpad community. And I'll pose their question to you now, Lewis. So they've asked, what are the key characteristics that separates a successful e-commerce business from one that is doomed to fail? And likewise, what are the characteristics of the people with successful e-commerce businesses?
Yeah, there are so many traits, I guess, of e-commerce businesses. I'll start with the businesses first and then maybe touch on the entrepreneur's side of it as well. But certainly with an e-commerce business, having many high-quality suppliers is going to be a huge threat and a bonus to create a higher likelihood of success. The more suppliers you have, generally, the better your ads are going to perform, because there's a wider selection of products. Like, we can't assume or dictate what the market is going to want. We have to just let them choose. That's the idea of the market. It tells you what it wants to buy. You don't tell it. So have those products available. That's one of the benefits of this model. You don't need to have huge warehouses where you commit to hundreds of thousands in stock up front. I saw a post by someone in a Facebook group the other day online, and it kind of made me wince slightly, because they were like, they said, I've registered my company, I've built my dropshipping website, so I'm all set, I'm ready to go. Now, where do I sign suppliers? And I was like, because I know that he's done it all backwards. You know, he's likely now going to have a very difficult time, because he didn't first validate the niche products before he built his store. And so he didn't first learn steps to validate and make sure that the business would succeed before just jumping into it. And that's the danger. Like, sometimes people get too tactical, but they're not strategic enough. They're not thinking about like the end goal of what they want their business and how they want it to work. Within our program, we make sure that people choose their niche based on data, not on emotion. You don't say, I think it will work, I feel like it will work. There are 9 separate data sets within our niche criteria validation, or niche validation criteria. So it's a very data-driven approach. Now, in terms of the entrepreneurial traits that make entrepreneurs successful, I mean, a few of the things, and this is not an exhaustive list by any means, but it would be that they focus on the few vital tasks and ignore the non-essentials. You know, they can separate the signal from the noise, and they're usually able to stay relatively detached from the outcome as well. So I mentioned something that I failed at miserably when I first started. The business started to crumble. So did I. I think one of the skills of an entrepreneur is you don't take it personally. You know, of course you adapt and you make those adjustments, but you've got to make sure that you're not, they say, ride the lows high and the highs low. And actually, we talked to Jared recently, didn't we, on a podcast? And I was like, how does it feel to have hit £4 million in sales? And he was like, yeah, but I don't spend too much time thinking about it, to be honest. And I thought that he's going to do really well here, because you can tell he's not like self-congratulating, saying, I've hit 4 million, that's it, I'm done, you know, I can cash out, I can exit. He's just like, well, it's just another day working, doing what I do. I enjoy the process. I'm not doing it necessarily for the specific financial milestones. And that way he can move on and continue to make improvements, but not be held up by focusing on results. So that's definitely a key attribute, detachment from the outcome. And then also, they're just action takers, like entrepreneurs that succeed are the people who see opportunities and they act on them quickly, and they learn and they iterate as they go. They don't just kind of ponder it, sit on their hands, think about it for ages and never do anything, you know, or read 100 books and then never take any action. Like, they actually put things into practice, and that's key.
Yeah, brilliant question, Ben and Harrison. Success leaves clues. So if we can learn from what the best people do, what the best businesses are doing, then we can implement that and achieve the same success. And I love that, being relatively detached from your outcomes. It just means that you're focusing on getting 1% better every day, and you're not going to get down in the dumps by anything. You're going to keep pushing on until you get to the inevitable success. Okay, next question for you, Lewis, is in from Andreas, and he has asked, can you break down the real costs of starting a dropshipping business, and how does investing in a mentor make a difference?
Okay, so I guess you can separate costs into different categories when you're starting a business like this. You've got your running costs, and then you've got your advertising costs. So in my experience, investing in a mentor or a mentorship program or a training program is greatly going to reduce your running and advertising costs, both of those, because the time it takes to become profitable will be so much shorter, because you won't need to make the mistakes that people have made who came before you. You know, learn from them. Don't reinvent the wheel. So if you can learn from other people's expensive mistakes about what didn't work, you can then learn where to spend your investment most efficiently and get the most bang for your buck. You know, if they say, don't run these types of campaigns, they don't work, we spent tens of thousands on them and they didn't work, do this instead, you'll get results straight away. Like, you could save yourself tens of thousands just from a single piece of advice, not to mention the full step-by-step blueprint. So if you think about running costs, these are like your Shopify fee, you know, Shopify apps. We might need a few apps that have monthly subscriptions, a business phone line, Google Workspace account. So that's like your emails, your storage for storing files. I wouldn't expect that to be over maybe £100 per month. Very, very low fixed overhead to this type of business. You're not leasing a huge premises. You're not hiring a massive team. You haven't got payroll to worry about. Very lean. In terms of advertising, that's going to be proportional to the sales that come in, right? So for advertising, I'd recommend having a few £100 ready to invest in ads. Say you had £500. If you spend that wisely, with the right suppliers signed, the right products uploaded in the right way, and you're sending traffic to those products, and it's all set up in the right way, this is the key thing, it all works in unison, then you should start to see sales soon, like within the first few days. Most of our members would see a sale within like the first 2 weeks, you know. And remember, this is a high ticket sale. So when you see that first sale, say it's for £1,000, £2,000, at a 30% net profit margin, you might make £600 in profit on that sale. Now that's £600 that you can reinvest back into advertising. So your original £500 ad, suddenly you have a lot more now, because you can add that £600 back to it to reinvest back into ads and make more sales. So that's the way that it works, scaling up your sales. And yeah, as I said, if you can find a mentor, you will shortcut the time it takes you to be successful and significantly reduce those costs, both advertising and fixed costs, that you incur before you start making a profit. And that's what it's all about, right? You want to make sure you take the path of least resistance to get the result.
Absolutely. So not to mention, it's cheaper in terms of currency, in terms of money. It's also cheaper in terms of time, which is much quicker to get profitable. And it's cheaper in terms of headaches and issues and failures and mistakes. Obviously, I went through that. I made a lot of mistakes when I tried to do it on my own, and also spent a lot more money doing that until I then joined a program and was able to follow the step-by-step training. And instead of putting money into mistakes, put money into a mentorship program, and you'll quickly become profitable, or a lot more quickly than you will if you try and go out on your own. That's certainly been my experience. Okay, next up is a question from Aisha. And she's asked, I'm still skeptical about the success of dropshipping. Are there really people who are doing this full time?
Yeah, totally understand the skepticism, Aisha. And I think when you're first introduced into this world, it does. It seems too good to be true because you're like, well, why would anybody be working in a 9-to-5 job then? Like, if this exists, why isn't everybody doing it? And I think that's a common misconception. And it takes a bit of a jump. It's like a leap in faith to realize that, well, not everybody has the entrepreneurial spirit or the intention or the drive to make it happen. There are hundreds of members now who we've worked with who had never run a business before. They had no idea how this all works. And now many of them are making tens of thousands, if not millions of pounds in sales. And so it's really interesting. There are so many different people from different backgrounds, accountant, plumbers, roofers, electricians, web designers, like all kinds of different professions. And way too many for us to go through on this podcast. I could probably share a few examples to kind of give you an idea. But Jared, for example, he's a good example. So Jared just hit £4 million in sales. And so he was somebody who had never run a dropshipping business before. He hit £310,000 in his first 6 months since he started working with us at Dropship Unlock. So Jared was a great example. Phil, who we actually had on a podcast, I think a couple of weeks ago now, he hit £100,000 in sales within his first 4 months of joining us at Dropship Unlocked. And that's with a 30% average profit margin as well. Tay was a good example. So she hit £30,000 in 4 months since starting. Again, never had a background with dropshipping, certainly not high ticket dropshipping. And then yourself, James, I mean, James, co-host of the podcast, sitting right with me now, like James hit £1 million in sales with his dropshipping business recently and is now a client success coach with us at Dropship Unlocked. So there are so many more success stories. I mean, if you want to go down the rabbit hole and look at them, you can check out the Dropship Unlocked YouTube channel and have a watch of some of them. But those are just a few examples of people that have no background doing this and are now up and running, making significant sales. So in answer to your question, Aisha, it might seem too good to be true. And I'm not saying that it's easy, but the path is very simple if you follow the steps and put in the work.
Yeah, and often you have to see things to believe it. But fortunately, in the online digital world that we live in, you can get around people that are doing that. You can listen to people, you can watch videos, and you can find out about people who are doing dropshipping full-time and have made it their full-time income. Also, you can get into communities, which we recommend. But it needs to be done because I think if you look around the people around you, it's very unlikely that you'll have people in your family or close friendship group that have their own e-commerce business and have got that up and running. Not yet, Lewis, and we're doing our best, but hopefully eventually everyone will know somebody that has run their own e-commerce business. But until that point, you just need to surround yourself, watch some videos and find out about the people who are already doing it that aren't too dissimilar to yourself. And that will give you inspiration that you can do it as well. Okay, so next question is in from Kai. So Kai has asked, for beginners who are feeling hesitant, what sort of mindset shifts and practical steps would you say are crucial to feeling more confident to start dropshipping?
Yeah, great question, Kai. And this is a really foundational one. So thank you for asking this because I think most people jump into the tactical consideration. But really, all of that is built on self-belief and self-confidence. None of the other stuff matters if you don't have the self-belief to get up and take action towards this business. Nothing will happen if that's not in place. So this is really the one to tackle. So I think the first thing to understand is that your journey is unique, right? Your self-belief is like you laying the foundations for your house. It's essential for everything that comes after. Now, you'll only take the actions that are required if you remind yourself daily that you can do this. You know, you deserve the results that are to come. And then, of course, once you have that in place, you need to actually show up and do the work. You can't just manifest your way to getting there and not actually do anything about it. You have to take action. But those can be small daily actions. You don't need to be scared about, you know, the huge task that lays ahead of you. The power of small, consistent daily actions, a bit like an athlete training every single day. They don't train one day and then go a month before training again. You have to keep training and keep improving day by day as entrepreneurs as well. You know, so that's something that is really key, actually, that consistency, because it's more important than and perfection. You know, if you're exercising, having those regular small workouts daily and consistently is so much better than going really intensely for one morning and then pulling a muscle and being like, I can't do that again for 6 weeks. You know, it's just that consistency is what's going to compound over time. And so make sure you're surrounding yourself with other positive, like-minded individuals. Control your sphere, like what inputs you take in. That's why I always said, like, I tuned out of the news. I wanted to surround myself with positive, confidence boosting inputs. And yeah, eventually you will get to the point where you start to take the kind of actions that are aligned with the person that you believe you're becoming. So it doesn't happen overnight, but eventually you get to the point where you think, okay, I believe this, I deserve this, I know what I'm doing now, let me get to work. And you'll start taking those actions and you'll see it all come together. And that will drive you so much further than someone who shows up and thinks, I'm not really sure if this will work, but you know, I'll give it a go, because they'll just fizzle up and then never succeed long term.
And confidence is key. And it's a shame when I see people that just don't believe in themselves to make things work. And if you can flick that switch in your mind to believe in yourself, to get around people that are going to be positive and back you and put trust and belief into you, then you can see that in yourself and realize how far you can go. But it needs to come from within. You need to start to believe in yourself. And that first comes from the thoughts that you have towards yourself. How you sort of talk to yourself is like the first thing. Give yourself the self-belief. And then you give yourself the permission to start taking the actions that align with that new belief, that new identity that you've created for yourself. So that's a key one. So great question there. Glad we could touch on that. A real foundational point of starting one of these businesses. Okay, next up, questions in from Johnny. And Johnny's asked, what advice would you give to someone who doesn't feel ready yet to start their own business?
Okay, interesting. So I now realize after a long time of doing this that the phrase, I'll think about it, is often code for I'm afraid to commit. You know, it's like you're watching the train leave the station and it's pulling away because you hesitate to step on it. And you can see it leaving, this opportunity, but you're afraid to commit and just step on it. And it's because they're often afraid of something deep down. So when someone says, I'll think about it, my next follow-up question is, what are you hesitant about or what are you afraid of? Because if we can help them tackle that, like, is it self-belief? Are they thinking about it because they don't yet believe or have those foundations that they can do this? Or is it confidence in the model? Because both of those things can be helped significantly by just getting around like-minded people, surrounding yourself with evidence of other people running businesses like this already, because you see them succeeding and you start to realize, oh, I could be one of those. I could do that. And that you feel that self-belief rising and you feel that confidence growing and you start to take the actions. But the whole foundation of this is built on self-belief. So if you write down your biggest, scariest goals on paper every morning and evening, and you write them out as if you've already achieved them, that's the key. You've got to write them out in the tense of, like, I am a successful business owner with £1 million per year business. I feel amazing. I have time with my family. I get to spend time with my children. I take my parents on holiday every year. You know, whatever your goals are, what it does is conditions the mind and it keeps reminding you to take the actions the type of person who has achieved those goals would take, because your subconscious starts to believe that you are that person. And therefore the actions you start taking, i.e. starting a business, i.e. calling suppliers, signing new products up and creating ads, things like that, those small steps happen based on a foundation of, I'm doing this because I am the kind of person that would do this. So it seems like the other way around. You'd think that you do the steps, then you become a successful business owner. You have to become a successful business owner first so you can then take the right steps. So yeah, I think that's key to this. And the other thing is people get overwhelmed. When they get overwhelmed with, like, the behemoth task that lays ahead, they start to procrastinate and you start to find distractions, things that you could be doing around the house that will stop you from moving ahead. So I find it's helpful to break your tasks into smaller, manageable pieces. And when you do that, you'd be amazed at what you can accomplish. If you set yourself like 3 micro tasks per day to get done, and those feed into a bigger task, you will eventually get there step by step. So really try and focus on your why as well. Reconnect with your reason for wanting to start a business like this. What is your why? Is it to spend more time with your family? Is it to be able to live and work from anywhere in the world? Is it to have that total time freedom and autonomy over your time, that's your fuel. That's the stuff that's going to drive you. You know, a huge cruise ship that's going to leave the dock, if they're preparing to leave and set sail, the captain doesn't say, "I'll think about it." You know, he checks, are the crew ready? Is everyone ready to go? And then he finally says, "Let's do this." And then they set sail. So you have to be ready in that mindset first before anything big is going to happen.
Enjoying the podcast? We'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment or a review, and we might just feature it on an upcoming episode. Also, for detailed show notes and resources, head to dropshipunlocked.com/podcast.
If you found value from any episode of this podcast, please take just 10 seconds to leave us a quick 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. It helps us more than you could imagine. And who knows, you might just hear your comments on the show. Thanks for being part of our community. Your support helps us keep delivering a new episode every week.
There's been some fantastic questions already today, and this is another one. So this is a question that's come in from Mallory, and they have asked, what is the best way to find dropshipping suppliers?
It's a great question, because if you know how to find high quality suppliers, then you'll have the foundations in place for an incredible business. So you need to start by having those foundations in place to be able to sign the high quality suppliers. So these are like trust signals that suppliers would want to see from your website and your company before they would decide to work with you. Because imagine, these suppliers get calls from people all the time saying, "Hi, I want to sell your products on eBay, and then I'm probably going to sell them at a discount. And then, you know, if ever I get a complaint, I'm just going to shut my store down and disappear," you know? And that's the worst nightmare for a supplier. They don't want their brand's reputation put at stake like that. So having a registered limited company set up, something we guide you through in week one of the program, having a business bank account set up so that you can give them those details ready for you to make payment, having the niche products chosen that mean that when they look at your site, they're going to feel like their products would be at home on your store. Building a simple store to show suppliers that has like your company number, your VAT number, your company address, your business telephone number, like all of these things are going to increase your chances of signing those suppliers. Now, the other thing is, we research the other retailers that are dropshipping in that market. So we know that the brands that we'll be approaching are already dropshipping and are already happy to work. So that's why the question I mentioned earlier that I saw in a Facebook group made me wince, because I was thinking the person hasn't even validated that the suppliers are happy to dropship. And so they're fighting an uphill battle if they go about it like that. Instead, figure out first that they're happy to build the store, then contact them. And again, we guide you through all of this step by step in the program. So reach out to those suppliers once you have them, one by one on the phone. Check out episode 22 of the podcast for a step-by-step guide, which is all about this. It's called How to Sign UK Dropshipping Suppliers. So that's episode 22. You can line up after this one.
Perfect. Thank you, Lewis. So important to get the foundations in place before you even contact a supplier, so you'll get a fantastic conversion rate of supplier contacts to supplier signed. Okay, next question is in from Declan. So Declan asked this inside the Dropship Unlock Launchpad community. So Declan's asked, I'd appreciate a deeper dive into a marketing playbook once things are set up and running. So what spend would you advise across platforms, and what key metrics are you looking for in terms of visitor activity, and what is the best platform to view them on? Is it Google Analytics, Merchant Center, or Shopify?
Our marketing playbook is deliberately simple. I think people often overcomplicate this, and then that leads to overwhelm. We try to keep it as automated as possible to drive sales for your business while you run the business from anywhere in the world. So one of the big campaign types that we've recently started to invest more in and rely upon more is Google's new campaign type, relatively new, called Performance Max campaigns. So these are kind of largely AI-driven campaigns that combine lots of legacy historic types of Google ad formats into one super campaign. So the bid strategy that we would use with a Performance Max campaign as of the recording of this episode would be maximize conversion value. And we'd set a target ROAS, or target return on ad spend, that is just above your break-even ROAS to start with. So again, we give you the ROAS calculator in week 5 so that you can go through everything inside the masterclass and have that set up and know exactly what your break-even ROAS is. But there are calculators online as well if you wanted to find that for your own business. I then test a variety of different audience signals within the Performance Max campaign. So I do this using different asset groups as well, and just test which combination of images, videos, headlines works best with which audience signals. So these are kind of like the Facebook audiences where you choose like interests, but really it's just a starting point that kind of points Google in the right direction and says like, go after people that are similar to this group. And yeah, the majority of my marketing investment for one of these stores would go into a PMAX or Performance Max campaign now. Once that's up and running, ticking along, making sales nicely, then I'd start to create search text ads for my best-selling products or best-selling brands or categories. And that way, I'd set up retargeting campaigns as well on Google and on Meta ads as well, and anywhere else that you'd like to retarget users as well. So across Instagram and Facebook on the Meta ads platform. And then to review my performance, because you asked about like analytics and things, I'd always use Google ads predominantly. And obviously, yeah, you can link that up with Google Analytics so that all your ads data feeds into analytics. And I'd be looking at the conversion value over cost or conversion value /cost metric, which is the same as your return on ad spend. So that's the thing I'd be looking at on each campaign. Is it hitting my break even? And then we can say, okay, now I'm going to set targets for my ROAS and try and hit your target ROAS on each campaign. Any that are underperforming, we either optimize them or switch them off. Any that are overperforming, you invest more in because that's going to bring you more profitable sales. So for more details on how we do that, if you check out episode 23 of the Dropship Unlocked podcast, that's called Mastering Google Ads for Your E-commerce Store.
Thank you, Lewis. Great question, because if you can optimize the marketing playbook that you've got in place, then you can just generate so many sales and consistent traffic to your website to make sure that you can run a profitable business from wherever you are in the world. So thanks for bringing that one up, Declan. The next question is actually from Declan again. You managed to get two in, so well done. And his second question is, what are your marketing thoughts longer term? So how do you both see the organic versus paid ad strategy once your store is up and running and profitable? So do you create a brand or do you focus on a very effective paid ad strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you need to think in terms of one or the other, like paid or organic. I see you can do both. I mean, paid is more immediate, so you'll see more immediate results, and that's what then cash flows your business. That's what means you can then pay the bills and, you know, maybe even hire a team to help with your organic from the profit you get from paid ads. So yeah, absolutely build a brand around your store. You know, we're not just building like burner stores here where we sell a few widgets and then disappear. We're building asset value. We're building enterprise value so that one day, if we wanted to, we could exit one of these businesses for a huge multiple, you know, 25 to 35 times the monthly net profit. So if a store that you had was making, say, £6,000 in profit a month, you could realistically look at selling that store, that brand, that business for a 35 times multiple. So £210,000 at a 35 times monthly profit multiple for a store that's making £6,000 per month. Now, obviously, you need to find the right buyer, go through a broker probably to find that. But yeah, you're absolutely building enterprise and brand value by doing that. So I'd start by focusing on paid ads because they're more immediate. You see results quicker. You could drive profit into the business. But then building a brand is a longer term play, which you do simultaneously, which will then enhance your profits in the long as well.
Yeah, completely agree with that. Get your paid ads strategy up and running, effective and profitable as quick as possible. The organic program, that's a longer term play. But I'd set up an automated process, whether that's with AI, with the VAs that you use, set up a process that will continually improve your organic reach and the amount of organic clicks you're getting into your website. And that will pay you in the long run, build that asset value for your business overall. And so you can get a higher multiple, you can sell your business for more and generate more income without being reliant on paid ads. So it's a win-win. So I think it's the answer is both instead of one or the other. So thank you for that question, Declan. The final question now that I'm going to ask for you, Lewis, is in from Josh to wrap up this Q&A special. And Josh's question is, how can I start a dropshipping business without having any knowledge or experience?
Yep. Okay. Well, Josh, my recommendation is to start with a really comprehensive guide. I've actually written a book called The Home Turf Advantage, which is perfect. So conveniently, that is available for you. It's my playbook for building a high-ticket dropshipping business if you're starting from no prior experience right through to getting a profitable store up and running. So you can pick up your copy today and get started immediately. If you just open up your browser and type in htabook.com.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Lewis. I really enjoyed this episode. And we're also going to highlight a listener review, which we love doing at the end of each episode. So this is a review that we've had recently from Vilak. So thank you for your review. He's left his in a comment under a recent YouTube video. And he said, thanks, guys. I bought the book and is going through it now. It was very enjoyable to read and make notes on. The chapters are very comprehensive and actionable. There's some great advice, especially when money is a bit short. But the book is extremely fun to go through. So thank you, Vilak, for your review. Do let us know if you've enjoyed this style of episode today, and we'll do more in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for your review, Vilak. We're really glad to hear that you've been enjoying the podcast. Have you enjoyed us answering your questions today? Before we go, I have one question for you that I'd appreciate if you could help me with. Have you left us a review yet? If not, please leave our podcast a review wherever you're listening to us today. It should take you about 10 seconds, but it does wonders for us, and it's a big part of what drives us. So if you'd like us to continue with the podcast and you haven't yet left us a review, please take a moment to do so now. Hopefully, we can read it out for you on the next episode.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Dropship Unlocked podcast. We hope you're walking away with insights and inspiration.
To kickstart your e-commerce journey, grab a copy of my book, The Home Turf Advantage, at htabook.com. It's a distilled guide based on real experience to help you build your e-commerce venture.
Don't forget to hit the subscribe button for more strategies and success stories. And if you like what you heard, a 5-star review would mean the world to us, and you might just get a shout out on an upcoming episode.
And finally, thank you for deciding to spend your time with us today. We can't wait to bring you more insights on the next episode of the Dropship Unlocked podcast.